This podcast was recorded on Thursday, February 21st at 10.05 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Bernie Sanders will actually join the Democratic Party now that he's officially running in the Democratic primary for president.
Details, Mike. Let's talk politics. This is Snolly Goster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those shrewd snollygosters who want you to pay more for gasoline so they can fix potholes. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, Sherrod Brown heads to Nevada and our Snolly Goster of the week, and also a correction.
But first, taxes and Republicans usually do not go together. You know, the whole read my lips thing. But Republican Governor Mike DeWine is doing just that. He wants to raise the state's gas tax by 18 cents a gallon to help pay for repairs and build Ohio's highways and bridges.
Like almost every Republican before him, DeWine promised he would not raise taxes in the campaign and suggested his opponent Richard Cordray would, and also accused him of raising taxes when Ted Strickland was governor.
The tax on gas in Ohio currently sits at 28 cents a gallon, and that's tacked onto the 18 cent federal tax. The last time Ohio increased its state tax was 14 years ago when the House Speaker was Larry Householder. He is once again House Speaker, and as of this recording on Thursday morning, the bill to raise the gas tax is being debated in the House Finance Committee.
While most Democrats support higher taxes for infrastructure projects, not every Democrat does. Sherrod Brown is not a fan of gasoline taxes,
which is a tax mostly on middle-class Ohioans and working families that need to drive 10 or 20 or 30 miles to work. We need an investment in infrastructure, but you don't do it by taxing working families.
For more on this gasoline tax, we are joined by someone on the other side of the political aisle from Sherrod Brown. Greg Lawson is a research fellow at the Buckeye Institute, a conservative group generally not fond of tax increases. Greg, welcome to Snolly Goster.
Hey, thank you very much. Glad to be on.
So, I take it you're with Sherrod Brown on gas taxes in this case.
We don't generally like raising taxes on people. We've always been in favor of reducing taxes. We think that's the right thing to do. Now, the gas tax in Ohio is a little different than the federal gas tax. Yep. So, one of the key distinctions between the Ohio gas tax and what happens in D.C. is we have a state constitutional provision that guarantees that the money that's raised through the gas tax is spent on roads. Now, in many other states and at the federal level, that isn't the case, and money that is paid through the gas tax can be diverted to other things, not necessarily doing the stuff you would think of, like filling the potholes and doing the replacement or doing stuff of that nature. So in that sense, Ohio has had one of the better constructed ones and is almost like a user fee. The problem is that that's not a permanent solution. The problem is that as the cars are changing today, we are going to see more and more of a divergence between the gas tax and what people are actually buying, because you got electric vehicles and hybrids and things of that nature. So we think the infrastructure needs to be spent on. That's a core government service. I think that if the legislature wants to go forward and do something, whether it's this 18 cents, which seems high, quite frankly, it's higher than we would have been maybe hoping for, quite honestly.
It's a 64% yeah. increase all at once under this bill. It would come all at once, and then going forward, it would be indexed to inflation, so it would increase automatically.
And indexing to inflation, I understand the reason for that, but look.
So they don't have to revisit this issue
again.
That's
correct.
So they don't have to tell constituents they raise taxes again.
And we don't believe that you should be indexing this. I mean, this is a painful thing. If you want to sell this and people believe that this is the right thing to do, then you're going to have to go it through the typical political process. I know it's pulling teeth, but that's the way to do it. You put it on an auto glide path like that, I think that's highly problematic. So we don't like that at all.
So right now, do you support an increase in the gasoline tax?
We know there has to be infrastructure spending, and so we know there has to be probably an increase in revenue from somewhere. But if you're going to do it, whether it's the gas tax or whether it's through registration and licenses, and there's other ideas that are out there, we need to do an offset. We've been public about that. We said that we need to look at the income tax. We have surplus right now. We're coming in revenues ahead of expenditures for the state. There's things that we can do. If you're going to be doing this, let's do some income tax reduction here to try to make this basically net neutral.
What gets cut when income tax revenue goes down?
Well, look, we've got a lot of areas. I think we need to do – there's a whole bunch of other policy areas where we need to be bending cost curves down, everything from Medicaid, Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections. There's a wide range of things. But we need to also realize that we've got a lot of pots of money that people have no idea about that's out there. For example, there's almost over $1 billion that's out there where the state is reimbursing local governments for local renewal tax levies. People don't even know that. $1 billion of state general revenues is just out there. And then we're also doing tax breaks. We're constantly doing tax loopholes and creating new loopholes that reduce revenues that way, too. We shouldn't be doing those kind of things. So those are ways to lower the rates on everybody. So if you're going to have a tax hike over here to fund something, let's lower it here. And don't just keep making Swiss cheese out of tax code.
Sure, it's part of the Grover Norquist thing. If you're going to raise taxes here, they have to be revenue neutral elsewhere. You specifically call this a user fee kind of tax. Would the messaging be the same if we had Governor Rich Cordray?
I think that we would probably have to talk about the same thing. Yeah, I think that we recognize that the infrastructure is a major asset to Ohio. We have the fourth largest number of highways in the country. It's one of our competitive advantages, and it is one of the things that the government should spend on. I think our big concern is, you know, you look at capital budgets over the years, and you look at money that goes to soccer stadiums here and there, and not, you know, billions of dollars, but tens of millions here and tens of millions there. Eventually, that all adds up. Those are the kind of things that we've been fighting against for years, and we want to see that. Another thing I'll point out that's really important here is that if you're going to do something that raises additional revenues, you need to stretch every single one of those dollars as much as possible. And we still do prevailing wage. I mean, this is a bit of a third rail right now. I know where the speaker is at on this, and I probably don't – I think it'll be a hard sell in the legislature, although I'm sure there's plenty of members that would be supportive of this.
You think we pay road construction crews too much money?
I think we need to consider, if you're going to be doing this and we need to get more projects done because of the backlog, we need to look at the prevailing wage structure. We did this, for example, with school building construction back in the 90s when we had dealing with the whole constitutional issue with schools. They actually eliminated prevailing wage on school buildings when they were putting all those facility money dollars in, and saved about over a 3 or 4 year period, saved almost $450 to $500 million. So, I mean, look, that's not everything, but should we be doing that? Is that being a good, responsible steward of tax dollars? I think it's something that should be on the table.
So looking at – you said this is not a permanent solution. So what is the permanent solution to fix and build our highways?
Well, there's a number of ways you can do it. There's obviously the registration of vehicles, and you know, I've heard some interesting ideas about pegging the registration costs to the value of a vehicle.
Kentucky does that, but they're also considering raising their gas tax right now.
Well, and they have a lower gas tax even than we do. I think they're like 22 or 23 cents, and we're at 28 right now. So, and other states have, and I'm not necessarily saying that this is the right thing, but something we could look at. There's property tax. I mean, my dad lives in Missouri. He has actually a property tax that's also paid on there. Now, nobody likes property taxes either. But that's something that you can at least look at. I mean, we have to be able to have multiple options that are on the table.
Is that like a personal property tax? Like,
yeah.
Massachusetts has an excise tax.
Yes.
You pay a certain tax every year on the value of your car.
Right. And so something kind of along those lines could be looked at. There are states that are looking at pilot programs. I don't know that any of these are ready for prime time yet, but Ohio might want to consider doing some pilots on VMTs. They call them vehicle mile travel taxes.
Yeah, Oregon has that. Yep. You have a little device in your car and you get taxed on each mile you drive, and then they do have a gas tax, and you get to deduct those miles from your gasoline tax.
Yeah, and a lot of people can be rightfully worried about privacy issues. I mean, if you're putting black boxes and big government, big brother and stuff like that. But, you know, you could do odometer readings. Now, that's not a perfect thing either. But, I mean, there's a whole host of these things, and I think what you're going to find is that eventually you're going to have a multitude of these things because the gas tax, as the fleet changes – When I talked about how it was a user fee and why I think that our gas tax is better than a lot of other gas taxes because of that constitutional protection, that only works so long as the more you drive, the more you have to, you know, pay for the gases. But if you've got an electric vehicle and you're not paying anything, all your taxes are paid at the electricity and none of that's going to roads.
Plus, you're going further on a gallon of gas now than you used to years ago.
Absolutely. So that wedge is now being introduced. So what has for most of history since the imposition of the gas tax been a user fee, now it's not going to be. Another thing we might consider now that this would also require us working with the feds to some extent on interstates, but there's also some discussion of can you do, and I know this is unpopular too and people don't like them, but tolls. And we can, technology is available. If you drive in a lot of other states, you don't even stop at toll booths. You know, I mean, it's not like the old days. Something like, or you prepay or you do something like that.
SunPass they had in Florida when I lived there.
Yeah. So, I mean, these are all things and I get it. Nobody likes taxes.
It's just the shifting of the burden. It's just a different way to pay for it.
Speaking of burdens and shifting burdens, why the Ohio Constitution says that gasoline tax cannot be used for public transit. But if you invest in public transit, particularly in cities, that lessens the burden on the roads and bridges. How should we fund public transit so we don't have to fix roads as often? We don't have to widen roads as often?
Well, we're not huge fans of how the public transit is currently done. There's a lot of issues. You've got big buses, and I know that, you know, they're changing their gas stuff and there's things there. But quite frankly, you don't get a lot of point-to-point service. They're trying to improve that, like COTA here in Central Ohio, you know, where they're getting more stops and stuff. But if you have somebody who needs to get to their job and they have to spend an hour and a half to 2 hours on the bus going both ways, that's really problematic. We're starting to look at the idea of voucherization of things like Uber and stuff, and working with tech companies like that, because you've got to get point-to-point service. So I guess when we're looking at that, so how do you fund that? I would argue that if we start transitioning away, there's local options like Iracota has a sales tax piggyback. Those are things that we need to probably continue, and voters are going to have a choice at the local level to make a decision on what they want to do. But I think if you started shifting, people would say, wow, we're going from the buses where, you know, we don't know and people are still walking three or four blocks after they did a two-hour drive. I think that you could convince a lot more people to be supportive, even at the local level, if you were really telling them these people are going to get what they want. Plus, if you're doing it the way that I was describing, you're getting money in the pockets of other drivers too, not just the people that are paid through COTA. And I mean, there's a whole host of issues with that. But this is a more market-based solution, and that's what we always stand for. So I think we need to start having that kind of a conversation as well.
But as New York found, you actually have more congestion on the roads in New York City now with Uber than you had with the taxis, because there are more Uber drivers out there, and that's certainly not helping the pothole situation in New York City. We're a politics podcast. What kind of position are Republicans at the State House in right now, faced with having to raise taxes, what, 2 months into their term?
Tough. It's a tough spot. It's a real challenge. It's a real challenge because everybody who uses the roads and all the different interested party groups that are out there are not wrong in saying that we need something. And they're not wrong in saying that there have been some Band-Aids that have been put over. I mean, the turnpike bonding thing, that put money out there, got projects done, but it was, again, a stopgap mechanism that didn't deal with long-term issues. So now all of this is landing on their feet. So it's a tough call. I think there's a lot of legislators that are going to have, rightfully so, an incredible heartburn over this. I think, too, you know, there's some folks who look at it in the gas tax, as Senator Brown said in the piece we heard. There's a regressivity to the gas tax, which is why if you're going to raise it, you got to reduce the burden somewhere, whether it's through tax cuts or enhancing the EITC for those that are at the low end who are going to be disproportionately impacted.
The earned income tax credit.
Yeah, sorry, income tax credit. And so you've got to – I think you've got to look at those ways of sort of offsetting it if that's the choice you do. Now, if you do something where you're, you know, doing these registration fees based on value, there's an inherent progressivity in there where you pay more if you have a higher value. So there's some ways of ameliorating it. I think they're going to be looking at some of those options, though, because I think some of these legislators are going to see those things as more fair, perhaps, than just doing the gas tax. And I'll also say, I think they're going to dig really deep and look and say, I think everybody agrees there's a problem and we need more revenue of some kind. What I don't know is, I know what ODOT is saying, I know what the administration said, I know what the commission heard. But what's the truth? You know, you in order to sell these things, you've always got to talk a little bit about
sell
stuff.
High and settle low.
And so what's the real need that's really truly there? You know, is it really the 1.5 kind of, I think it's like, what, 1.5 billion or
over
so?
Over 10 years, yeah.
And all, or is it 1 billion? Or is it, I mean, what is the actual amount there that we're talking about? And is there something there? So I think that some of these guys are going to try to dig into that. Unfortunately, they don't have a lot of time because the transportation budget has to be done quickly.
Right. March 31st.
Yeah. The governor has to sign it. Yeah.
So Republican lawmakers, I can already imagine the challenges from the right coming against them come next primary season if they vote to increase this gas tax. Looking at the governor's office, the DeWine administration obviously inherited this problem. They've been in office less than 2 months now. What do you think this says about the Kasich administration?
I think Governor DeWine inherited a very unpleasant situation. And it's I think
– I mean, was the Kasich administration negligent in ignoring this?
I think the Kasich administration tried to find a creative way to get money right away. They did that. I was never a big fan of the turnpike issue because I didn't think it was a long-term solution. Again, it did give money and all, but it did punt the ball. I mean, it definitely did, and now the ball has kind of landed, and Mike DeWine's the one who's got to run with the ball. And so I think It's probably disingenuous to say that it's all like, I'm not going to put all the blame there on the Governor Kasich's doorstep, but I think that they could have been a little more proactive in terms of thinking through what we really need to do, or at least starting some of these pilot programs I was talking about earlier, doing something where we're thinking about it so there was a little bit more for the next administration, whoever that was, to have something more to play with than what they're being confronted with now. So I think it was definitely not handled very well.
Do you think for now this 18-cent gas tax increase passes? Do you think it gets into the transportation budget and it becomes law this summer?
I would be I actually think there's a decent chance that a gas tax increase of some kind will happen.
You're not sold it's going to be 18.
I'm not necessarily sold it's going to be 18 cents.
Greg Lawson from the Buckeye Institute, thanks for joining Snollygoster.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg. Another week, another Democrat, or a kind of Democrat, announces a bid for the White House, but the Sherrod Brown watch continues.
I didn't grow up aspiring to be president of the United States. My dream was to play center field for the Cleveland Indians. I'm ready to play today.
Look at me. I can be center field. Ah, the one-time pro ball dreamer turned presidential explorer does not need a coach to put him in. He could do it himself.
But instead, he continues his Dignity of Work tour this weekend in Nevada. After this, he has one stop to go. That's South Carolina. Then he says he will make his intentions official.
He's got to be running. I think he's running initially anyway. I don't know how long it lasts. But, you know, even if he joins up with another candidate, he's a very compelling vice presidential candidate.
It's funny.
I think he starts his campaign.
It's funny. He wanted to play center field, just like John Fogerty. He would be the centrist candidate, so he could play off of that a little bit. So
yeah, he's the anti-Trump Democrat. He's the pro-trade, Rust Belt disheveled Democrat with the raspy voice. He really is a compelling candidate. And
I'm not sure how much longer he can wait, though. I mean, listening to it's still very early, and we in the political punditry class tend to make too big a deal out of these little announcements and things like that. But, you know, the field is starting to gel a little bit, and you see how Elizabeth and they're raising money right off the bat. I mean, Bernie Sanders raised $6 million in the first 24 hours. Kamala Harris raised $1.5 million in the first 24 hours. Amy Klobuchar, $1 million over the first 48 hours. She took 2 days. When Sherrod Brown gets in, he's got to try to match that number to get some buzz.
He's not going to match Bernie Sanders.
No, he's not going to match
$6 million
Sanders,
in the first 24 hours.
You know, he's got to raise $1 million in the first couple of days, I think. And we'll see if he can do it.
Yeah, it looks like Bernie's the leader in the clubhouse right now. But
Biden's leading the polls, and it's purely name ID.
But Biden is not officially
in
yet, the race.
But if you ask Democrats who they want, it's Joe Biden right now, if he runs.
Okay, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week, the politician who most exemplified the shrewdness of a Snollygoster, who is a self-serving politician. But first, we do have a correction.
Yeah, last week, our Snollygoster of the Week was a state senator who was blocking constituents on Facebook. You can't do that, but we mispronounced his name. It's Joe Eaker, even though it's spelled like euchre. It's Joe Eaker. So our apologies.
He's still our Snollygoster of the Week from last week, Joe Eaker. All right. So this week's honor goes to Leslie McCrae Dowless. He's a Republican political operative in North Carolina who, according to voter fraud investigators, ran an operation that collected and possibly tampered with absentee ballots in the congressional district held by Congressman John Harris.
Now, Harris holds a 900-vote lead over his Democratic opponent, but that election has not been certified because of this investigation. The fear is that some of those absentee votes for the Democrat were collected and tossed out. Congressman Harris says he did not know anything about all of this.
So, Leslie McCrae Dowless, for the shrewd, possibly illegal absentee ballot collection system, you are our Snollygoster of the Week.
If it's proven to be true, this could be Snollygoster of the Year.
Yeah, these are pretty damning allegations.
That's pretty shrewd with a capital S.
I think that would transcend shrewd. But either way, Leslie McCrae Dowless, you are a Snollygoster of the Week. If you have suggestions for next week, send us an email to snollygoster@wosu.org. And don't forget, you can always leave us a good review on iTunes or just tell your buddies about us. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.